Good afternoon and welcome to Home Run with Hemd and Dwight. It's a Thursday. Ooh, thank God.
Tomorrow's it's first. A Thursday.
You know, yesterday when I was, I felt somewhat had this funny, flu-ish type of, more like a cold-ish type of feeling. I have a sneaky suspicion it is it was screen time. Yeah, that's when I.
Oh, meaning you looking too much?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yes.
Yeah, so, got home, cold shower, switch off all the lights, throw away all the devices, took a nap and woke up and I was perfectly fine. Yeah. So, on today's topic, for those of you that saw the poster, is about the Indian Prime Minister's visit to Namibia.
Yeah.
And of course he was accompanied by the External Affairs Minister, which is refer to here as International Relations Minister. Yeah. And agreements, bilateral agreements were signed, and India is one of those countries that fall under the division of, the Namibia-India cooperation. This is one of those corporations that falls under the category of South-to-South corporations, something that also dominates the agenda of the 2025 BRICS summit that took place in Rio. So, before he came here, the Indian Prime Minister was in Rio, right? So, this is somewhat, to some degree, it's safe to say that this is sea-to-sea cooperation, in implementation that we just witnessed with the Indian Prime Minister's visit. And while I was thinking about this whole, trade agreements between different countries, I couldn't help but equate nations, countries' trade relationships with sleepovers. Let me explain. I know. Because nations' leaders, right? They meet, like we just witnessed the Indian head of state and our head of state, where they met and signed a series of, a series of agreements, most of which are economical. So, when I'm looking at that, I'm like, these guys will not do the trade. Is the private or public entities in their respective countries that will be conducting the trade, that will be acting on this agreement. And that's where the slip over now, and it also got me cracking, when I thought of it. Because, parents, before they allow you to go and sleep over at someone's house, they first have to look at how safe that place is for their child. Yeah, then that's when they'll be like, okay, there are no fire hazard, there are no hazards, and there's maybe foul language that's frequently used. So our child is not going to be exposed to something negative. That's when they'll be like, okay, fine, you can go over to Dwight's for sleepover. So, parents in this case, presidents and prime ministers in this case are the parents that are looking at the atmosphere in different countries and going like, we are not trading with those guys. Those guys, on the other hand, we are trading with.
I want to add something there, Hamu, to what you just said there about parents negotiating.
Sleepover.
Yeah. I want to add something there.
You're welcome.
So, while that three-tier negotiation process is taking place, there's another additional level there between the parent-to-parent negotiation.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of, just watch out. This particular kid has this kind of a personality, behaviors.
Yeah, these allergies.
Just watch out for these things. Sometimes they're ones that go do funny things in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. Watch out for that kind of behavior.
And also, no fluids after 8, because then you will wake up with a Noah situation the next day.
We're making this whole discussion a completely different thing.
I know.
But it is actually, you are right, Helmut, because it does look like here's who the parents would be in this discussion.
Yeah.
South Africa and India and China.
No, Namibia. Oh, come on.
Number three is the kid. Where's the kid?
Give us some credit, man.
No, I can't. I can't give us credit. Look, I can give us credit for benefiting from many things from South Africa.
Yeah.
Ne?
Yeah.
But when you look at this scenario, the discussion here is based upon what additionally can be added on. Now, remember the particular speeches that the president had yesterday when she met Modi?
Yeah.
And then Modi's particular speech that happened in Parliament yesterday. Now, they are technically a mirror of each other, or they're like, not polar opposites, but it's like, you know, the same reality, but two different perspectives. Obviously, when Modi went to the parliament, he had to speak in English.
Mm-hmm.
Not that thing that he pulled there for us, because when I went and looked at the video feed, after President Nandi Ndaitwa's was English speech,
mm-hmm.
The Indian Prime Minister Modi just stuck to Hindi.
Straight.
He just stuck to Hindi. He said, hello, thank you, Hindi from there on. I was like, my guy.
So was there at least an interpreter?
No, bro.
Just went in head first.
So just to hear the particular engagement that he had earlier in the day, to hear that in Parliament, being shared. And that's not also after he received the highest national honor that that Namibia gives, to whoever, which is the order of the Velvicium Mirabilis. Mm-hmm. Well, if you get to live as long as the Velvicium Mirabilis, yes, probably you could be considered ancient and thus also protected.
How old is that tree?
I know that that plant can get at least, can become at least past 100 years. It can age past. Well, Helmut, it's nothing compared to those massive, those trees that you find in the US? The sequoia tree. Those trees can live up to 1,000 years. And then you also get some of the acacia trees here in Namibia. They can also live up to 1,000 years. So.
And the stories you'd tell if you live that long.
Not just that. It sometimes also shows how futile it is when you come here with a green initiative. Yeah, let's go plant trees. And you know that some of your indigenous trees, for the thing to mature, it takes 400 years. And everyone will go like, yeah, ne? They slim, ne? Clever, ne?
You've got to be kidding me.
Who's going to live for 400 years to manage that tree?
No one.
And even by year 5, the tree is still a sapling. It'll still be this high. So, ask yourself, literally ask yourself, Harmon, if you get those sequoia trees, which are as big as, you take this block, where our studio is in, from this small street to that street here at the back. A sequoia tree, some of its stumps, some trees, were as broad as this block.
One tree?
One tree.
Okay.
Those trees are ancient, Helmut. Those things are old.
Yeah, look, I'm so glad don't get me wrong, I'm so glad human beings don't live that long, because at this point you may start thinking just how, you know, diabolical my thoughts are. But I don't think us living, past 100 years would be a good idea. The point is, sometimes when it comes to dictators, death is the only solution. And it has come in handy from time to time. So living for 1,000 years, I can't imagine the Austrian painter living up to 1,000 years. That would be a bad idea.
Mm.
So it's thank heavens trees can do that, but human beings, past 80, 70, kick the bucket, bye-bye. Yeah.
So if we divert back to our parental discussion that you started us off on.
Yeah, sleepover.
The sleepover scenario. What Namibians have to look into specifically of this engagement that took place was specifically, this is what the international relations realm aims to achieve. Now, Namibia and India have established bilateral relations. This particular engagement, Helmut, literally just took it to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And Namibia is obviously already benefiting from our closeness to South Africa, which is BRICS number five. And, our particular developmental assistance that we get from China, which is BRICS number four in the particular acronym or abbreviation description that I'm giving you. However, South Africa itself, Helmut, is literally responsible for the largest proportion of Namibia's socioeconomic developmental landscape. Yes, there are things we inherited at 1990. Yes, there are things that the South African private sector has invested greatly into Namibia. And I'm talking about the food retail sector. No one does it as good as the South Africans. No one has it as big as the South Africans. Secondary onto that, we get most of our particular consumer durable good, retail sector from South Africa. We can't just import cell phones directly, let's say, from Singapore. It has to be, come through South Africa because there's some specific technical standards that Namibia automatically is, accounted for in South Africa. And when I heard from one of those discussions that I had with one, economist here in Namibia, where, back in 2022, that was after the discussion that took place of the riots in South Africa in 2021. Remember with Zuma's incarceration?
Yeah.
Where that daughter was responsible for the incitement.
Decided to go Twitter hungry.
You know? I asked the question based upon, you know, why does South African, like your canned foods and stuff. Why do we get the same stuff that you see in South Africa? We find it in Namibian shelves. Besides the obvious linkages between the similarity in the shops, the proponents, the functionaries that allow the product to get there. Mm. Besides those similarities, why do you see the same products? And then he explained to me, but Dwight, the South African factories already, they automatically account for Namibia and Botswana and Lesotho and Eswatini. It's not to go and look for some fancy explainer in SACU agreements. These guys automatically account for these four other economies. Automatically. And then you get the other flip side of things. The South African food retail sector is more than happy, Helmut, to buy Namibian red meat at any price, as long as it's free of foot and mouth or free from any particular animal or zoonotic infections in the past 12 to 2 year period. If you can prove that, the South Africans will pay any price per kilogram. Even if it is above the price per kilogram that you as a Namibian get in the shop, they will pay it. They would not care. They will pay it because they know that, well, that one carcass can probably be used in multiple food manufacturing, agro-processing, food manufacturing instances. Now, do we understand in Namibia the particular finer details, the not so obvious, well, they are pretty obvious, but you get the particular gist.
Yeah.
That closeness already. So now India wants to help Namibia in some particular aspects. So obviously, President Nandi Ndaitwa obviously spoke there about youth unemployment, obviously spoke about other particular considerations until we ended up at Palestine and Western Sahara.
Yeah.
Which took that discussion pretty sideways, pretty quickly.
That discussion went south really fast.
Yeah, well,
I mean, I knew it was a south to south. I didn't know it will go that south.
Yeah, it's just a little bit weird because we're now obviously seeing what the Americans are busy doing with anyone that comes outright and says, they are in solidarity or support Palestine. Mm-hmm. And remember, Namibia also has very good relations with the US.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that dealing with India or trying to expand further with India in terms of economic trade or trade overall is a negative, because India also has to also negotiate it with the US to say, hey, listen, bruh, stop this discussion of tariffs. You know, you'll just make things difficult for your people.
Yeah.
It's also one of the reasons why I don't consider, someone that uses an 1858 example or template of tariffs. And at that stage, it was companies that wanted to sell in your economy versus now, well, if you want to penalize or punish your own consumers, your country's citizens, then the rest of the world went like, you know what, we'll use your US dollar, but we will trade with each other more. Which is another particular thing that Africa itself has to realize, because that's not the biggest question here. Africa has to realize that thing, you can still use,
the US dollar
for payment terms, but as long as the goods go to each other and the goods don't stop in a US harbor or in a US port first, the goods that go directly to each other, you can still convert each other's currencies into US dollar, which obviously means that the US Reserve Bank or Federal Reserve prints more money because they see there's more countries using it.
Yeah,
which obviously once again motivates the discussion based against the de-dollarization move that BRICS is trying to empower. But I mean, even that scenario that Trump recently announced after the BRICS countries, where we did the BRICS analysis back on, is it Monday or Tuesday that we did the BRICS analysis?
I think that's Tuesday.
Yeah, that was Tuesday. And that literally is in the same timeline of today, because what President Nandiyandaitwa and what Prime Minister Modi literally said to each other yesterday is literally a carbon copy of what the declaration by the BRICS nations that you and I focused on in our previous discussion technically is based upon.
Yeah, look, this is something that I think you pointed out at some point that made me sort of like fail to understand the whole tariff thing, because even at the end of the BRICS summit, Trump was just going on and on and on about tariffs. But here's the thing. Anyone that understands tariffs, you don't have to be an economist, more like kind of understand it on a technical level.
Mm.
Just understand it on a basic level and ask yourself one question. If you add a price to a product that's getting in your country, who is paying that price?
Yeah.
It's not the manufacturer.
It's not.
It's the consumer.
Yeah.
And these consumers are in your country. So tariffs, if anything, tariffs are the most, a very slick way to extort money from your own people, because they're the ones that will, they're the ones that will have to fork out more money to buy this product.
Mm.
It's either they have to fork out more money to buy this product, or they will just stop buying the product. And when they stop buying the product, then anyone that sells the product in that market will not have any reason to take that product there.
Mm.
So all the shops that sell that product that side now, they will all have to close. That means it's your people again that will be left without jobs. So it's a perfect example of shooting yourself in the foot. Because in one way or another, the people on the ground in your country are going to pay the price, whether that is by buying those products that are under high tariff or on a higher price than they would usually buy it on without the tariffs, or them losing their jobs because because the manufacturer does not want to supply those shops anymore because they're just no customers.
And that is completely spot on, Helmut, because the scenario obviously that exists here is one where firstly start with the multi-pronged hemorrhaging that the US SME or MSME is facing. Firstly, it's immigration. Yes, Namibia in its own right is also a highly conservative country, because we also, if you, for any better reference, Namibia does have some MAGA, what you call it, similarities, just like the Americans.
Yeah.
And I mean, in Namibia, we're probably even slightly worse than the US immigration and customs officials, because some of the stories I've heard is that the guys, if you've not been processed properly in either being a refugee or being absorbed as a permanent residence holder in Namibia, or you're legally here in terms of that you came through with a passport, you came here on holiday, and somewhere in between you met a boyfriend and then decided to open up a business. Like, there was an Austrian woman who did that, and then immigration had called her, and then she tried to fire off her staff from the restaurant, and then the staff went to the media. The media jumped on, and the media were asking, so why are you trying to fire your staff? If you're trying to leave the country, just to hear that because immigration approached her here on her overstaying her welcome, literally, because in between she also got married to a Namibian. But you coming here on a 3-month visa versus you marrying or falling in love now with someone, and then starting a business. The two things are not connected.
Yeah.
Immigration doesn't care for Ministry of Finance or Ministry of Industrialization and Trade scenarios.
Congratulations, you started a business, created a million, but...
Great stuff, but you are here and you are here illegally. I had to use this extreme, Helmut, versus someone just accidentally walking across the border, you know? That person can even be a son person, because in many cases, the son sometimes do things like that. Or the person could be the guys there in Zambezi. Mm-hmm. The Zambians that walk across the river or that canoe across the river.
Yeah.
You've given us multiple examples
of
even your extendeds, you know, saying, hey guys, how you doing? How's that side of the...
Are you not coming for the holiday? Yeah. Right.
You know what? We've got a spit break going on here. You know, we've got a lovely chop, and then they say, okay.
Come over.
Okay. Give me by five. And then it's just business as usual.
Yeah.
So I'm not using those references. I'm using someone that showed up with a passport. When you look at the hemorrhaging that the US MSME is suffering from, so I'm talking about this is construction. This is other particular like small contractors and jobs. Obviously, those guys are crying the loudest versus the more established businesses in that economy because of the multiple hemorrhaging that they're suffering from. The immigration officials that are doing their jobs. Secondly, and then there's obviously the tariffs that are get now imposed, because remember there was a court case or a high court case or a Supreme Court case that took place in last month or in May, where a bunch of MSMEs, which you can translate to in an American context, is also like an order with, they're not an order with me per se, but they were importers of international goods.
Yeah.
Those guys were most of the guys that took Trump to court, to this high court or to the Supreme Court engagement, just for the case to be thrown out. Because the Supreme Court highlighted, but it is within the specific ambits of the office of the US president, because the US president identified a need. And ultimately these guys were sort of like working against, you know, trying to source things locally. When you depict the image like I just depicted it for you, when you depict it in terms of what that ecosystem looks like, in a Namibian context, we could potentially, or we are already facing a similar thing, because there are so many Namibians that complain about South African goods.
Yeah.
However, they're the first to jump onto, what's that thing's name? The Chinese one? Alibaba and AliExpress. And then the first ones to jump onto those two things, and they would love to wait 3 months for the thing to come out of a Chinese factory instead of just ordering it out of South Africa and it's here overnight shipping. Voila. Okay. That's me once again taking things far. But still, when you look at these particular scenarios, Namibia's biggest problem is industrialization. That is our biggest problem. Our biggest problem is whether or not we have Namibians that can work in these factories. To just go and say, open up a factory in every constituency. I'm sorry for using that, for overusing and abusing that example. But you know what? It wasn't a manifesto. This was literally, this was literally someone's plan. If they became president, you would potentially have seen bankruptcy everywhere because there would have been some factories like we saw with the agro-processing discussion
that are lying dormant,
that are just standing empty and people don't know who's supposed to work there, who's supposed to be in charge of it and who's supposed to do what with it. You know what? Since we've got that factory standing there in Ngurunguru, Helmut, that whole plant with machinery just standing empty,
yeah.
I think it would have been one of the best ideas to highlight there to one of the ministers there was Mr. a commerce minister. I'd have told that guy, hey, listen, bring a business entity that can come and manufacture underwear and t-shirts and vests and what's the other thing and sleeping wear.
You know, toothpicks.
No, not, you can't have a toothpick factory in a garment factory.
Well, just to have it, okay, you know, yeah.
No.
What?
You can't have a toothpick factory in a garment factory.
We're trying to industrialize here.
Do you want people to sit with splinters in their underwear?
Okay, that's a bad place to have a splinter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, exactly. Because the two materials just don't mix. They come from the same resource, nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they just don't mix. So, since we also have very strict forestry laws.
Yeah.
But still, on the aspect of making clothing, do you know that we already have a functioning industrial complex that's not opened up to the economy?
Please elaborate.
I'll mention it again. You know of who I'm talking about. They wear orange. They are divorced from society. They are self-sustainable. They are trained with skills. Uh-huh. Sometimes they're not everyone's cup of tea at the family meetings or even in the broader communities. They're usually the problem kids in most cases.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm talking about Namibia's correctional services because those guys are given skills behind closed doors.
Yeah, it's a correctional service. It's a way of basically turning you into a model citizen. Yeah, model citizen for you to fit into the, for you to be a, what's that word that's more often used diplomatically? Productive member of society.
Of course. And a God-fearing one at that as well.
I don't know about God-fearing, but anyway.
However, how productive that particular individual becomes after exiting said particular correctional service, Helmut, is another discussion. Because here's the thing, right? We sit with a tannery which has volunteer employment,
mm-hmm.
who volunteered supposedly their own raw material, which is ever fresh. Your words are ever fresh. Ever fresh.
Hey, they are.
And no one is in charge of the facility, so no one knows what this facility is producing, where the inputs are going, what the total economic value is that it technically generates for Namibia's economy, because nothing is happening there. Something is happening there, but in my eyes, it translates to, if you've got a volunteer force who own the inputs, then you know no one is doing anything there.
I can just process it for you, you know.
I know a guy that knows a guy.
I know a guy that knows a guy that has a volunteer.
Don't worry, there's no money involved.
Yeah, right.
Right, that's the description in that report. I know a guy that knows a guy. And there's no money involved.
For all the initiatives that we're going to come up with, especially the garment factory and the tannery one, among other places that have not reached their intended productivity level.
Mm.
Is that all the equipments that we set up to, you know, all the equipments that we had to, that we put in place to try and accomplish this garment manufacturing, to try to turn Namibia into a garment manufacturing industry. We had to buy these machines from somewhere.
Mm.
So we set at some point, and we told ourselves, you know what, we're going to start a garment factory somewhere, which was a brilliant idea on its own.
Mm.
Garment factory, brilliant idea. You know, soft industries, that's a good place to start.
Where we should have started.
Yeah. And it seems like machine-wise or industrial-wise, in terms of setting up the infrastructure, we have started.
Mm.
But, you know, operating the infrastructure, on the other hand, that's where we are lying dormant.
Mm.
Now, the we buy these equipments and then set them up and then just cross our fingers and hope we find in the locality someone who will be able to operate it. Shouldn't it be like,
I like that you use the word we hope.
It's more of a crossed fingers scenario.
It's like praying for rainfall during a drought season. I like that you used the word hope, Helmut.
We were hoping because you can't help but just look at the poor foresight of it all.
Mm.
Yeah. What was our initial idea? What specific piece of garment were we planning on producing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was it supposed to be supplied?
Exactly. Which market was it supposed to feed
exactly. in? Exactly. What do they call it? Distribution role players. These are now retailers.
Yeah.
How are they going to play a role? Because here's the thing, Hamut. There's a lovely ad if you go into Woolworths, any Woolworths shop now, and I'm sorry for mentioning their names, but I like practical examples that set the scene.
Yeah.
You go into that shop, there's a big banner that says, produced locally for locals. Now that is a South African local production campaign. Now, Ministry of Industrialization and Trade had the same campaign.
Mm-hmm.
The Grow at Home initiative, which tried to spur on MSME growth, MSME capacity development, all that stuff, you know? But here's the thing. Like I kept saying, the easiest way, the most merchandisable elements are the things that you use every day. So underwear would have been the best scenario, making Namibian underwear. If there was a Namibian that could manufacture sanitary pads for women, it would have made it more accessible and even more cost effective and thus best suited for African consumption. Because you know what? Go read those sanitary pads for women in the shops. Go read where it's made. It's imported from China and India.
No kidding.
It's imported from China and India. Yes, guys, there's nothing wrong with buying those things. You know, sometimes if you're a dad and you've got daughters and a wife, you have to buy those things. I'm not a dad. Don't worry. I was sent by someone else.
Being there. Don't worry.
Yeah. No, I also had to explain because you've got some of those guys that go like, you did what? No, there's nothing.
Oh, no. Been there. Boy, did I buy the wrong things. And got yelled at. But
don't tell me you did the pads with wings.
Not that.
I hope you didn't do that.
Oh, I went worse.
The Americans, they're making memes about their boyfriends and husbands. The wife tells the guy, please go buy me pads with wings.
Yeah.
Homeboy comes back with the sanitary pad.
And a bucket of KFC.
And a bucket of KFC wings. Yes, any woman would have loved that. I know. Women love free food. Just like that.
You've got to be specific. What is it?
But with us guys, it's just, you know, go get that thing. It's like we were told as kids, and then you don't ask. You just go get the thing.
You just go and get whatever you
don't know. You don't know whose property it is. You're the one getting beat up by the police. But all you know is that your older brother told you, go get that thing.
But looking at things that we use on a day-to-day basis, what would you go for? Like, what piece of product that you look at?
The first two that I mentioned.
Yeah.
But I would focus so greatly, Helmut, on, clothing manufacturing for Namibians. Helmut, the downside isn't there, and this is the negative of the south-to-south cooperation. And this is the other thing that I did 2 years back in 2023 when I looked at that specific report that I cited in the one BES show that I did in 2023. Is it too late for Africa to industrialize? Is it too late for Africa to try and compete with certain zones in industrialization? Okay, those economists, because economists technically take a look at what was. They don't look at what is coming.
Mm-hmm.
Economists do a lot of, you know, looking at the past, an event that already happened. They are so right. Think about Indonesia. Indonesia can stand up to a multinational like Apple.
Yeah, and tell them, nope, we're not going to do it that way.
I don't care if you invested a 70 million US, not 70 million Kwanzaa, Kwacha, Rupee. No, US dollars.
We don't care about that.
We don't care about that.
You have to devour the locals.
You said 100. And you said that at least 70% would be sourced from local capacity.
So
local capacity. So there are local manufacturers that want to make money from a product that is an American product that has to use locally sourced products, I locally sourced input products. Now, that is a gradual step to get to Indonesia, right?
Yeah.
But where I believe Namibia can still perform, Helmut, is that if you can show Namibians that they can make wages every week, they can get paid every week by meeting a quota of targets by manufacturing 500 underwear in a week per person, by manufacturing 50 t-shirts in a week. If Namibians can understand that there are certain jobs where you ultimately can, you won't have a pension. You won't have a pension. You won't even have a social security number. You won't. Because the margins are too small. And if people don't know what a margin is literally that little thing that the business owner makes from the overall price of the product.
Yeah.
It's that small little thing. Because the margin cannot be too high, no one will buy it. Because everyone will ask you, but if it was made locally, why does it cost the same as the thing that is imported from South Africa?
Or if not even more expensive.
Exactly. Helmut, we grow cotton. I don't know where those cotton farms are, but there's cotton producers in Namibia. Remember, I told you this last year.
Yeah.
With that UN Comtrade platform where I discovered we produce cotton. We've got cotton farmers here. We've got wool. We've got leather, depending on where it comes from, obviously, and who obviously were involved. Because if you hear, there are volunteers involved. Grain of salt. No, walk around with a shipment of salt. Walk around with that. You look at, what's the other thing? The potential is there for silk. The potential is there for even the hemp discussion that I keep, you know, that I keep advocating for, because I believe in an economic benefit.
Yeah.
I don't believe in the recreational benefit that the Ganja Users Association of Namibia likes to advocate for, because they're advocating this from a religious perspective.
Yeah.
And most Namibians are Christian conservative. If a Namibian,
at least, you know, once a week.
I mean, Helmut, we come from Christian conservative backgrounds.
Yeah.
I prayed more than any Muslim in this world.
You have no idea.
I didn't pray three times in different directions. I prayed eight times a day. Six times before and after a meal, and twice at the start of a day and at the end of a day. Because that's the actual Catholic template that you've got to practice at home.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to ask you, Helmut. If you know in your household you come from a Christian conservative perspective, obviously that particular influence is there in the background, will automatically shout from the top of the rafters or from any high stand in a stadium, don't approve okay, we've got an ad break coming up.
Some things kind of have to be together, right? Imagine, pop, but no flakes. Never. Or a goal without a celebration. And friends, but no Tassenberg.
Now that's just not right. Tassenberg. Best together. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal. Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build. Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Great news. Imba just got even better. We have had a...
Welcome back. 16 past the hour of 5. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with Hampton Dwight on Eagle FM, and we are talking about South to South cooperation in reference to the Indian Prime Minister's recent visit. So, Hemp, not the recreational, let's focus on the textile.
On the textile
industry. One, yeah.
The reason being, dear listeners, now a lot of you would obviously, when you heard me start off on that tangent of hemp, which is a cannabis variant plant. It's the other variant. Don't worry, I also had to read a lot about it. It's not just about my conversations that I also help you guys listen to, that I have with Angela Prissa, who is also from the Cannabis Association of Namibia. But, and because I obviously, I always keep the conversation on economic benefit as opposed to recreational, which is in most cases individual benefit. It has to have a altruistic and utilitarian purpose. It shouldn't be just about the individual's needs. The Constitution looks after that as long as it is not deemed as an illegal substance by the relevant laws that support the Constitution, which technically helps to explain a recent scenario regarding the confiscation by the police of a massive plantation from a father and his son, two farmers. I can't remember if it's here in the Omaheke or in the Ochodonjupa region.
I think that was in the Ochodonjupa region.
Yeah. those guys appeared this week.
In court.
Yeah. I just have to verify if it was yesterday or today, or the day before, Tuesday meaning. Those guys appeared in court, Helmut, on those charges of growing a prohibited substance or a plant. The downside of what those two did as farmers. Now, I'm not stepping into, trial by public opinion scenario. I'm just giving you an observation based upon, if there is a product that is deemed illegal by the Namibian Constitution or by relevant laws, it does not say you must go and get the product and then try to change the lawmakers when you are in possession of the thing.
Do it the other way around.
I mean, Helmut, remember you had the very informative discussion, you and I, about lobbying.
Yeah.
And economic lobby groups that exist. I mean, what did the tobacco guys do before that? When did the tobacco guys realize was it the 40s or the 50s that their consumer base was developing all these severe smoking related illnesses? They started lobbying. They knew they had to get closer to the political class.
It was in the 1950s where the scientific research, linking cigarette smoking to lung cancer was beginning to stack up. It was sort of like difficult to talk their way out, so they decided to
start lobbying.
Yep.
And then the gun lobby came along in the U.S. because there were just too many Americans walking around with firearms.
Mm-hmm.
Gun lobby showed up. The alcohol lobby showed up because they make most bourbon, the other whiskey. They are also a massive beer manufacturing country. So how is it that only in Namibia that the farmers don't realize that if they see the climate and the climate change discussion is against them, they don't form themselves into a proper lobby group and lobby to say, hey, listen, we'd like to bring in some innovative agricultural practices to help us sort of like adapt to the times.
Yeah.
I mean, just like remember the agroforestry discussion that we had here and the other one about organic farming.
Yeah.
You know, changing from one, cattle breed to another, which is more suited for African and Namibian climates
yeah.
and conditions. farmers have to do the same thing. It's not just massive companies.
Part of the problem, I think, is especially in reference to, you know, especially in reference to farming, is it brings us to the example of the tree that he used. If we are going to rehabilitate the land that is quickly becoming barren, we'll have to plant more trees. And of course, you're not just going to because you just want to plant more trees and take reforest an area.
You won't show up with a prosopi.
You won't show up with a plant that is native to Japan.
You won't show up with a tree that has been deemed an invasive species
because
by the Ministry of Environment. So you won't do that.
No, you won't do that. Because if you, if you bring up with that, then you are going to cause more problems because what you want is to create an environment that is somewhat native to that part of the world. You will have to find trees that are, you'll have to find trees that are native to the land.
Yeah.
Now, they are native because, you know, they can deal with the sun. They can deal with, maybe you'll have to find, Namibia is semi-arid. So, most native trees are most likely going to have tap roots, aka long roots that are that are going to penetrate the ground to reach the water that's deep underground. Because if you find, because if you just go around planting trees that are fibrous roots, because those ones are mostly
surface level,
surface level fruits that are, that do well in a heavy rain environment like the, like rainforest areas, because, water is not not their biggest worry. Now, all this obviously requires you to sort of like understand your environment. It brings us back to the Albania, Albania green energy discussion. The Albanians did not say, since everyone is going for solar as a form of green energy transition, how about we all also adopt solar? They basically looked at the environment and saw that, I don't think we have enough sunlight, but there's one thing that we have in abundance to compared to all sources of energy that we could exploit to our advantage, and that is a lot of flowing surface water. They took advantage of that, and it's working for them.
It's actually standing. It's a bunch of lakes.
A bunch of lakes?
They have the most lakes in Europe.
Lakes?
And it's a country the size of, I think, Ochotón Chupa region?
Tiny.
Or it's Karas, one of the two regions. It's the size of Ochotón Chupa region or Karas.
How do you generate? Because the way I understand hydroelectricity is it has to do with the current water that drives the turbine.
Yeah.
Now, in a lake, that water is not flowing.
No, it's not. But here's the thing about it: they do have. There's a glacier that feeds one river.
Glacier.
Because one of their power stations, when you and I did that discussion, at the end of last year at the COP, COP 29, when we did that discussion about Albania as this miracle, a renewable energy producer. And when I read what was this advantage that Albania sat with? Because like you said, it's not just about putting up solar panels and about wind turbines. It's literally a scenario that they have so much surface water, meaning standing water bodies, that are there perennially, that all they needed to do was just, hey, you know what?
Figure out how to...
You're an engineer, ne? Come.
How can we?
Install here, local content policy generation, and that's how they technically made themselves the beacon of Eastern Europe, of this renewable energy picture. They don't even have to go anywhere close, Helmut, to a green hydrogen discussion.
Because they're already there.
Yeah. They can even say, we are the answer for anything electric vehicle. Because you can literally charge your car. They're also at the forefront of battery technology, positioned close to their renewable energy power stations. Straightforward stuff.
Okay, document about our oil, our oil industry that came out of Deloitte Namibia was that?
IBS.
Yeah,
the baseline study.
The baseline study. You know, one of the reasons why that document, keeps, is going to continue to fascinate me is, I feel like, the public sector, could learn a lot of things from that document because it lays down, more like a blueprint of what is going to happen all the way to decommissioning. And that's a lot of planning that's required, obviously, from step to step.
Yep.
You know, from a seismic survey to, to setting up or, to setting up ports, that's the physical infrastructure part of things, which will enable, because after drilling it, those tankers will have to dock somewhere. Those tanks will have to dock somewhere to put in, for you, for them to load.
Mm.
Yeah. So all this infrastructure must be in place. And the fact that they laid out everything from, from surveys all the way to decommissioning goes to show, that, if you are, for example, going to plan to, if you're going to talk about coming up with a textile industry, you want to sit and say, okay, now, who is our target market? If it's Namibian, what's the most, needed piece of textile that you, is it t-shirts, is it body shirts, is it underwear, is it socks, or do you want to produce bandanas with a Namibian flag? That'd be weird.
No, but you always start, Helmut, with what do you have that can be lead to further production?
Yeah.
So I already said cotton is there. Leather is there.
Yeah.
So what would you do?
Yeah, now where I was going was it's a good thing you brought up the cotton discussion because when we came up with the textile industry in Kurenkuru, did we bring up take for example the cotton guys on board, like we want to produce this and you seem to have the raw material, can we strike a deal? Or did we just, go and start putting up tools together without figuring out where we're going to get the raw materials from?
Mm. Because that particular assessment would help any investor understand, okay, I can invest this amount of machinery and I can try and do this. And then the next step would be for that investor to go like, who can buy what I will produce? And then they start talking to the retailers, the local retailers.
On the who can buy this one. Okay, yeah. You know what?
Because you will need a supply contract. With that supply contract, you will go to any bank and say, I have this supply contract. Please help me with an overdraft or with a financial facility to keep things going and to be able to pay things in the meantime at the start so that it doesn't drain my initial investment, capital investment or input investment that starts off the whole endeavor.
Damn, how are you broke? How are you broke?
Ooh, me?
Yeah.
For thinking that out?
Uh-huh.
Well, Helmut, it also you also have to know a few people to explain certain things to you. Because the banks don't go around advertising and saying, hey, listen, if you've got $100 on you, come borrow $500 from me. But remember, you've got to pay the $500 back. They don't go around saying that. Yeah. So I have to hear from other people how you need to prove, that collateral discussion?
Yeah.
You need to prove to the banks that you've got this part. Yes, this part is at risk of being possessed by the banks.
Yeah.
But it's just for
if
you
things
to
go south.
Yeah. Ad break and we come back after that.
That iconic taste of Heineken. Loved in Germany, Amsterdam, Argentina, and Namibia. That crisp and balanced taste of Heineken. Loved around the world. Enjoy that refreshing thirst. Only made possible by Heineken's unique 5-star credentials. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and LinkedIn. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM, the eye.
29 minutes left to the hour of 6. This is a home run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. So you have to know someone to explain something to you.
Yeah. So, I mean, it took me also a little bit of a while. And your accounting friends, for those guys that study accounting, they are the world's biggest trolls. Because sometimes they also hide information from you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Even though I had accounting in terms of its basic forms in much of my education life, right? The downside is, I was just taught how to read accounting reports and have the basics in terms of understanding and potentially understanding what an accountant does, or a bookkeeper, or someone that has been trained fully as an accountant. But many cases, accounting people are the guys that go talk to the banks. If you have a financial officer, mm-hmm. they're the guys that have to go talk to the bank.
The ones that understand the lingo.
You, as the company owner or as the CEO, you have to negotiate with the bank. But the one that really talks terms, conditions, what is required, what is this, what is that,
yeah.
is your financial officer or your accountant or your auditor. Because your auditor's reports also helps to give a level of security and risk gives a risk assessment or view of a risk assessment to a financial institution. I remember the one friend of mine that is an entrepreneur and MSME herself. I interviewed her once during COVID as well, in terms of how difficult is it for the MSMEs to try and, you know, be resilient in COVID conditions during the lockdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Because her business is based around the malls being open. Before she got this business going, before COVID, this is now prior, before COVID, she tried to work through a incubation program that is part of NUST's business school. But here's the thing, Helmut. It's a mixture between Dragon's Den, where you've got to pitch your idea to a panel of people that represents Namibia's so-called economy. I say so-called.
Yeah.
And the assistance you get is from fourth and third year university students who know nothing of the real world scenario of dealing with the Namibian government and its functionaries in terms of requirements.
Yeah.
Why I say that statement is because I know multiple MSME people and small business owners and people that have said they find it problematic to hear that, for example, in the food retail sector, there's like 5 food inspectors or something inspectors that City of Windhoek has. And those guys are overbooked for appointments. But, there's a specific specialist that can close your business down as a restaurant or as an eatery in a minute like that.
Because you
probably just had one employee there that spilt oil here, or another one that accidentally scratched in his nose or something, and that guy now saw it and there's a complaint and stuff like that. I know my examples are pretty severe. I'm sorry, Hamoud. I'm sorry for the visualizations, but still, the business can be closed down in a minute, just like that. Instant loss of revenue, instant loss of being able to trade, instant loss of being able to pay and ensure employability of your employees. Because
mm-hmm.
many things can be corrected, many things can be remedied. But that's also not what's being communicated in the Namibian economy. It's not being communicated like that. Well, I can't speak for the street vendors, because the street vendors are clearly told every day by city police, you can't trade here because this is for pedestrians. We didn't designate this for commercial purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Go and trade there. Go and trade there. Now, if a formal business has to play by the rules, unfortunately, the street vendors also have to play by rules.
Mm-hmm.
Helmut, you're playing the same football team. You're playing the same sport.
Yeah.
In Afrikaans, we call it klein sokkertjie. Klein sokkertjie was like 5-a-side football in the street. But you know that there was one guy that showed up with the ball. That guy was the goalie, the ref, the manager on both teams, even though he played for the one team. And he was the ultimate decision maker and timekeeper, because if his mother calls him for lunch or for dinner,
and he has to go, game
over. Then literally the match stops there. Now, we know of a setting like that, but even in a setting like that, where there was complete and pure authoritarianism present, and in most cases, it even resulted in pure dictatorial and tyrannical scenarios, because in many cases, fights break out.
Now, those things, you know, showed, I think that's one of those indicators of just how I think it's very innate for human beings to abuse power.
Of course.
Yeah.
And at such a young age, it's very brutal.
Yeah, at that age, and you're already doing things like that, that's when you go like, hey, if he's only doing that because he owns the ball, imagine this guy owning a company.
Yeah.
You cooked.
So, you work from that template, ne? But the same rules still apply, as if you were playing professional soccer or football.
Mm-hmm.
Handballs are penalized. Severe fouls are penalized. There's only one person that can play with the hands on the pitch, the goalie, up to a certain point, because sometimes those lines were also questionable in terms of where the goalie's rights start and begin or start and end. So, but you still had similarities.
You gotta love soccer.
You still had similarities.
Yeah.
The downside here is, Helmut, if you hear real life business operation or business operation scenarios. How much you'll be surprised about how many people that are MSMEs, not street vendors, MSMEs, mm-hmm. will tell you, why must they drive to Bipa on one end and then to Ministry of Industrialization and Trade, which doesn't exist anymore, then to Social Security, just to be told by Ministry of Finance, I can't give you a tax number because you don't clear at least $200,000 in revenue a year.
Eish, man, if you look at
this. But most of the things that you need to operate in this economy, you have to import. But you are paying an import tax.
Yeah.
And then you have to make that import tax back, meaning you have to charge by law.
Yeah.
Even though you don't have a VAT number. You have to charge by law a VAT. You have to charge VAT because you were charged a tax. Now that is part of your markup, your margin.
Yeah.
As a business owner. You have to charge that because you have to make that expense back.
Yeah.
So in reality, you get to understand why in some cases some people that try to become entrepreneurs, they find it difficult specifically to try and cultivate true consumer products in Namibia. In many reasons, and this is just my conclusion, and also an observation, an educated one based upon media reports of how tenderpreneurs operate, is the reason why many people are very quick to jump to become briefcase companies or tenderpreneurs, because to deal with the red tape of the state, it's a headache.
It's a nightmare. Yeah.
Unless you were there before independence.
Two things. One, now that you brought that up, when I look at especially just here in Windhoek, when I look at the distance between, I mean, I like the close mm-hmm. proximity between the Minister of Finance and NAMRA. But when you look at
NAMRA's employees came from Ministry of Finance.
I know.
Yeah.
No.
So all they had to do is carry their pieces from here to here.
I'm talking about their buildings, that side of Robben.
That's what I'm telling you.
So they just moved out.
They had to carry their furniture and pieces from here to here.
Across Robben Mugabe.
Yes. Yep. I mean, even their boss was number two to the minister, was number two or number three or number four to the minister. That's now below the deputy minister.
Yeah.
So he also just had to carry his things from here to here.
Yeah, now, if you have to deal with, with NAMRA, Ministry of Finance, Social Security, and BIPA, the distance you'll have to move, because BIPA is in Northern Industry, Social Security is in Commerce, and now you have to, Ministry of Finance is in town, and you have to, that's one heck of a triangle. Yeah, but coming back to the C2C discussion, emphasizing the Indian Prime Minister's visit. One of those things that was, one of those agreements that we signed was for Namibia to adopt, I'm not sure if I'm using the right word there, to adopt India's unified payment interface, UPI.
Yeah. I wanted to come to that as well. Yeah. It's a good thing you're going there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, when I heard that, I was like, I mean, that's a lot of convenience that they're bringing on our side. But also, on one hand, one thing that hit me was, India is big. In land mass is not much of a problem because we have a lot of land and the relative population there are like what, 1.4 billion, we're just 5 million. So, but they are an industrial hub.
Mm.
India manufactures everything from civilian to military tech.
How much they make their, they make their own firearms.
Manufacturing something is not a problem for India.
Yes.
That raises one question. What are we bringing to the table?
Yes. Helmut, let me tell you another story.
This is scary.
This is scary. Let me tell you another story. India and China has one of the world's largest petrochemicals and petro manufacturing, complexes. They are the world's two largest plastics manufacturers. Back in, was it 2022 or 2023? There was an Indian business delegation that NIPDB brought to State House. I don't know if you remember that delegation.
I'm not sure if I can.
At that delegation, because I gave Justicia the report that day. At that delegation, there was an education private sector representative. There was a pharmaceutical private sector representative. There was a, there was another health related one. Then there was, the health related one was the plastics. Still in the health.
Mm-hmm.
The pharmaceutical one is because, remember, India is the world's largest vaccine manufacturer. Largest. India can produce or that specific thing that comes, because the one COVID vaccine we got from India was the Covishield vaccine. Mm. But it was, the recipe is literally the AstraZeneca recipe, because there was an AstraZeneca that India distributed. That's the one they manufactured, the Covishield one.
Yeah.
Then there was the AstraZeneca that was produced in Europe, that the British bought the most up from, and the Canadians also bought a lot from. But the one that India produced, the one that they donated to us immediately that year in 2021 or 2020, that we got a donation from, the 200,000 vaccines. At that stage, if you go and look at the company that manufactured Covishield, that company before COVID produces 200 million vaccines a year. Helmut, to be able to produce 200 million for the world's most important sector in your country, and you sell that product, which is a final product, you sell that product to the UN, to the AU, to whoever wants to buy that product. Do you know what kind of a market leader that makes your country? Africa, with all its disease outbreaks, for some reason cannot capitalize on the one sector that is the most pivotal one, that allows for resilience, that builds on resilience.
It's time to win your share of 500,000 Namibian dollars in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia, on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further.
Super Bargains await you at USAVE, where you pay for the product and not the brand. Pay only 26.99 Namibian dollars for 400 milliliter Dawn hand and body cream. 36.99 Namibian dollars for 1 kilo of Mama's washing powder. 750 milliliters Captain dishwashing liquid costs only 18.99 Namibian dollars at USAVE. And large Sona bath soap, just $12.99 Namibian dollars. You save. We all save at You Save.
To all Eagle FM listeners, do you want to stand a chance to win a voucher of $500 Namibian weekly? Answer this easy question. Please tell us, what are the three colors of the USAVE logo? Please SMS your answer to 081-200-4144 and tune in every Friday between 1:45 and 2:00 to find out if you are the lucky winner. The winner will be announced every Friday live on air between 1:45 and 2:00. Participate weekly to improve your chance. We'll save at You Save.
It's time to win your share of $500,000 in prizes for Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune in.
Welcome back. 13 minutes left to the hour of 6. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. And like I pointed out earlier, what do we have to offer? And the payment system that we just agreed to is the United Payment Interface. Mm. It was developed by the National Payment Corporation of India, NSOE.
I know, and they have massive SOEs. Well, we don't know about their level of corruption, but you know what? They've got massive SOEs.
Now, they have an SOE that's so effective, we signed an agreement to start using it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which will make payment instantaneous.
Yep.
But we already have, instantaneous payment.
With
our current payment system.
Uh-huh.
It's also known as sometimes as an e-wallet, a blue wallet, a blue voucher, and all those funny things. You know,
swipe.
Swipe.
And know. That stuff is finishing my money. But look, the thing is, there are a few things here. One, India is an industrial hub. That's no surprise. That doesn't come as a surprise to anyone.
Mm.
So that means if you're going to get into, south to south type of discussion, and this is the same, by the way, with China. The same with pretty much, the same with China, Russia, India. All these countries are industrial hub. They are, their manufacturing industry is in the ionosphere. We have not even left the lower atmosphere. Now.
Here's the other thing with that UPI.
Yeah.
I think it's more between Namibia and India.
In terms of trade agreements?
In terms of payment. Remember, trade is based upon, am I able to send money to you? And are you able to send money to me?
Yeah.
The money shouldn't take 5 years to get to Mumbai and 7 years to come to Windhoek.
The reason why I'm bringing that up is because it takes me, one of the things that is sort of like, made this whole Indian Prime Minister's visit very interesting for me is that under tourism in the introduction to Namibian economy, one thing that Mr. Shobon points out is that Asia has one giant market that Namibia can exploit in terms of tourism, but I don't think we have put into some thought into how to cultivate that market, because Asia is huge. The two biggest countries with the biggest population, aka India and China, they're all in Asia.
Mm.
Now, but, most of the, so that means if you can break into this market tourism wise, you are looking at, you're looking at, 2.8 potential visitors. 2.8 billion potential visitors.
Okay, not that heavy, Hamilton.
You're at least
looking at 700 million here and 500
I know babies
million.
Won't crawl all their way. But,
So you're at least looking at a 700 million here and a 500 million there.
Now, the thing is, anything that you can produce to feed into this market, if it's the right product, you have one heck of a market.
The only thing I'm afraid of...
The question is, what will that be?
The only thing I'm afraid of those two markets, is whether or not they respect laws on the African continent.
Well, one thing for sure is, if you were thinking beef, count India out of that.
Well, not just that. If you are thinking at nature conservation and trying to look after your local fauna and flora, one of the biggest problems, unfortunately, is that there are very opportunistic people that unfortunately come from China. And that's not to say anything bad about every Chinese person. It's just when you hear examples like the one in Zimbabwe, where one specific Chinese national almost obliterated all the entire conservation efforts of Zimbabwe. Elephant conservation.
How many elephants was he shooting per day?
No, she wasn't shooting. Oh. It was the business opportunity she was providing for poachers.
Ah.
Because, you know, you show up just with money and then you say, I've got money, I want this.
Yeah.
And people were going like, hey!
A guy with a gun.
Then we will just go and take the whole time without looking at the replenishment rate. So, now what I'm just citing is an article, obviously, that I read about this. The downside is, it's not to say that every person, obviously, coming from a country is bad. Because, the unfortunate thing is then our clearest example would have been that every European tourist that comes to Africa is still a potential colonizer. That would have been the wrong, you know, sort of like, what do you call it? Logical reasoning that I would have applied.
Yeah.
That's ultimately not. So to still stay within the sanitized explainer that you provided about tapping into potential 2.8 billion markets for tourism. That is true, Helmut. But here's the downside. When you go and look at official and market related observations of their tourist markets, they love England. They love Japan. They love the US.
England and
they
the US.
They love Australia. We, for some reason, we get the weird ones coming to South Africa, Namibia, Kenya. I say weird ones because they come in small groups. You know, and it's not regular. It's not to say it's regular flights flying out of Beijing or regular flights flying out of Mumbai or Delhi. So, if those markets can develop and grow to become like a Frankfurt, like the German market that comes here every year, there are many examples of many people that will tell you they, European tourists will save every year to fly back to Namibia.
The potential for tourism then has to do with disposable income, because a lot of people that are leaving most parts of Asia, especially India, to go to Western countries like the US and UK are looking for opportunities.
That too, or it's something that they know. Here's another thing, Helmut, that many people don't realize when it comes to tourist markets. Tourists go where they've seen and heard from other people who have been there before, you can come here.
Recommendations.
Now you can ask yourself, now how many times does Namibia get recommended internationally? Well, for example, as a starter, you could look at where does the Namibia Tourism Board market Namibia? The Namibia, like I told you last week or the start of this week, the Namibia Tourism Board promotes us in Frankfurt, promotes us in, was it Barcelona or was it Madrid? Promotes us in Spain. They will probably go and promote us in America. They will probably promote us in South Africa or in others. Or they'll probably promote us in Moscow. So now we are potentially talking about Indian nationals and Chinese nationals flying here. But has NTB ever promoted us in those two countries? Because believe you me, they have tourism expos that side for international companies. So the trade-off here is also one based upon if the South-to-South initiative is to really kick off, then it means also functionaries like the Namibia Tourism Board has to look at these markets and say, hey, listen, guys, Africa is not just there for poaching. Africa is not just there for mining.
Yeah, especially those two, I swear. Okay, here's also yeah, here's one thing, because they say, well, one thing for sure is that well, whatever we want to trade with India, I don't think textile is going to be it, because they are the biggest textile producers. Like that would be like taking
and technology for China.
And tech, yeah, yeah, it's, that would be like taking a 5 liter of water to the Atlantic Ocean. It would not make sense. Look.
I mean, that's a bad example.
No, no, it's not a bad example, man. This guy. Look, these guys are, textile wise, they're through the roof.
Yeah.
Tech wise, through the roof.
Yeah.
You know, military technology, again, through the roof. Like, the question is, if we're going to trade with countries like India and China, what are we going to sell them?
Yeah, what are we going to put on the table?
That's a loaded question, because the, that's a very intricate one, which always makes me, be thankful that I'm not in any public office, especially the, especially international relations, because that's a very tricky question. Like, what am I going to sell to, what am I going to sell to India? What is it that they can't produce?
Or what is, now the only thing that, yes, there is some trade, and that is in extractive minerals.
No, of course.
But India also, looks to Namibia to help resuscitate some of its local, animal species or animal, animal populations, like the cheetahs
that we sent over.
Now, it's apparently, I hear somewhere it was also an elephant. But remember, there's a difference between the African elephant
and
Asian elephant as well. And yes, you can lay the blame at Alexander the Great, and all the going back in history and stuff.
For one, African elephants.
You see the problematic scenario.
Yeah, a big one.
So the Northern Hemisphere also has a, even though there is a part of the global south of the northern, in the Northern Hemisphere, the Northern Hemisphere, what many people have to realize, has got a larger concentration of people than the Southern Hemisphere. That's why the Southern Hemisphere is smaller, is less densely populated.
Yeah.
There is no 1 billion or even 800 million or even 500 million population, Helmut, in the Southern Hemisphere. There's no country with a 500 million population group literally below the equator. Indonesia, I think, is just above it. Indonesia and Malaysia.
Yeah.
They're just above it. So, and I'm literally talking about countries below it. We've got ample enough space. We've got, we've got enough living room. The competition for resources doesn't look as ugly, even though in Namibia it's starting to look ugly, because you have mining that wants it's to protect its dominant position. Ministry of Environment or the Environment or the conservation guys are caught between two very hard places, because they don't know, should they give a concession to agriculture on the one side for food security or to mining on the other. And both these two are destructive exercises.
Yeah, and they're also considering in, the area that has the potential resources that the mining guys want to exploit.
Yeah, which is like, the conservation.
The conservation area with some kind of species that are just unique to that area.
Exactly. As well as also that are tourist destinations as well. Which is the comment I made in that discussion that we had 2 weeks back.
Yeah.
Which tourist wants to go and see half a shoveled up mountain in Namibia?
No.
No, they don't want to see it. They won't like that picture.
They'll be like, what are we doing here?
The postcards don't speak. They don't match to the real picture.
Yeah, according to the postcards, there's supposed to be a mountain here.
Yeah.
But now there's a giant pit.
And some dust. A dust storm because of a mass of trucks moving in and out of the area. So even that policy document, Hamid, you can literally see that policy document just doesn't look it doesn't look like it's trying to support tourism or environmental conservation in any manner. The Ministry of Mines just has to say straightforward, you know what, we want it. Give us carte blanche to act as we want, because we will anyway get there. That's what they want. That policy document is just, you know, it's literally a wolf in sheep's clothing saying, you know what, I will do my best to be vegetarian, but while I live between the sheeps. I had to put on my best African accent there, you know.
Yeah.
The wolf is literally telling the shepherd, I will do my best, brah. Look at me. I'm a reformed wolf. I'm a reformed carnivore.
Can't believe you went to wolf. You know, I would have given a bestie example, but anyway.
A what? A best what?
Bestie example. Boy is dying. No, we're just friends. Oh, come on, seriously. Be honest with yourself.
The wolf will even have an MOU signing ceremony with the shepherd. Look here, you know. I have a memorandum of understanding. It's not an agreement. It's just, I'm making him understand that.
Yeah.
I understand that. You know, my therapist told me I must not eat meat, but you know what? I haven't given my full commitment not to eat meat.
I have no idea how many times I've been told that. But, overall, if you ask me, this visit came at the right time.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, which just took place shortly after the BRICS summit. Which also focused on the south to south corporations. This is basically a way of developing countries saying, we know better, you know, as developing countries, we know better about the problems that we are going through.
Mm.
And, we know these problems better in a way that developed countries would be somewhat a little difficult for them to relate. So what's going to happen is, we are not cutting ties with developed countries. We'll still maintain ties with them. But also at the same time, we want to create sort of like a tie that is independent of the tie that we have with developed countries.
Yeah.
We want to create some type of a relationship like that with our fellow developing countries. And this is something that we just witnessed, you know, in practicality yesterday. Yesterday with the presence of the Indian Prime Minister and the Indian External Affairs Minister. I swear you have no idea how many times I've referred to Jaishankar as a foreign minister.
Well, that's what most of the international media also gets wrong. Oh. But his actual title is External Affairs.
External Affairs, yeah. So, 4 minutes into the hour of six, so I think this is where we wrap it up. But it's the question I just can't keep to, you know, I just can't stop asking myself is, what are we bringing to this table? Forget India. Let's just ask ourselves that question in South Africa. I know.
The thing here is, Hamut, it's literally the SACU India preferential treatment agreement.
Yeah.
Which is also the same thing that Mercosur has with SACU. It's not to say that it's just exclusively Namibia that enjoys this trade relations discussion.
Yeah.
But that Namibia is like a gateway to the rest of the SACU market. And vice versa, like South Africa has been. Just like you find GWM cars in Namibia that are manufactured in South Africa. Just like that Peugeot plant was said, hey, Wena, close down. Because...
Like, what are you doing?
What are you doing? It's already coming from South Africa. What are you guys doing? So, when you've got to look at the scenario, and that's why I kept always saying, for Namibians that come and complain about the SACU block, you're here, you can't take Namibia, pick it up and put it somewhere else. You can't. You just can't. Think strategically. How can I use this thing to my advantage?
To my advantage, yeah.
That's why I said, if any of those dignitaries that were there yesterday that met from the Indian dignitaries that met with their Namibian counterparts. I would have asked as some of the Namibian ministers, listen, we've got a thing standing there, a textile garment factory standing there, and it's just gathering dust.
Mm-hmm.
We just want you to come and show people how to make the garments. And then we've got a cotton producing farmers there. We've got a tannery scenario there somewhere. Yeah. I say somewhere because there are most volunteers working there most. But that's all, Helmut. But here's even the worst case. This is how things even compound and make me even more sadder. I told you before of the Swakara leathers.
Swakara?
Yeah. So you get, I know they are companies, but you get Swakara leathers and Nakara leathers.
Nakara?
Karakul.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
These are leather products, which are garments that get exported outside of Namibia.
Yeah, I think they have one shop somewhere in town.
Yeah, they have the shop there.
Yeah.
When you go look at, I think it's the Swakara one. It is the Swakara one.
The one in town?
No.
Oh, yeah.
This is the one that gets exported to Denmark. That exports to Denmark. So they export the raw thing like that to Denmark. In some cases, right? And it forms part of Denmark's fashion sense over there of leather products. Never in my life have I seen two parts of the same economy walk in totally different directions. Never have I seen that, Hamoud. What does it cost to literally have a truckload of leather pelts drive from one side of the country to another side of the country to be processed? Never, ever, 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 ever. Now, if you go and look for a leather jacket or a leather handbag or a leather bag, Helmut, all of them are branded and imprinted and sometimes imported from another part of the world. Because Namibians, they also, in many cases, don't want to buy from some Namibians that already work with the leather products as well. It might be a thing of preference, which it most cases is, because you as a consumer, you have a built-in preference to what you want.
What products you want, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Helmut, it's the same reason as to why I'm wearing a Billabong jacket here. You're sitting there with a Kati, that rapper from South Africa, hoodie over there. If there was another rapper that made such a nice hoodie in Namibia, you might have considered the person.
Yeah.
Or if there was a local surfing brand that made weather relevant clothing, meaning that you can see that this jacket was meant for someone standing on a cold beach, like Namibia's beach, to be able to be, you know, protected from the elements. No, we don't have something like that. And that is one of the particular things here also, is that you can continuously see that the market research doesn't speak to the true
needs
that exist. The needs are inverted. The needs are employment creation. Yeah, but the employment must be linked to something. The employment must be linked to an economic consumption activity. That's also one of the reasons, Helmut, before we wrap up, why it's difficult to understand the consumption economy in Namibia. We're the only people that speak about consumption. We're the only ones that speak about consumption. The NSA helps with measuring the consumption because it's based upon import statistics.
Yeah.
And export statistics. But further than that, you get an abstract analysis about the consumer price index, which doesn't fully help you. Then you get other consumers, like the one I had the argument with last year about the affordability of internet, where the one guy comes and tells me about aware rates. I keep telling him, hey, that's a sales gimmick. It's a bundled rate. There's an actual per minute, per second, per megabyte rate that exists. Please don't talk to me about a bundled rate. A bundled rate is not your actual rate.
So it comes down to the lack of understanding of how things work. Oh, yeah. Well,
not just that.
I think I'd have been lost in that technicality.
It's not just that.
Yeah.
Many Namibians don't understand commercial activities. They don't.
Yeah, that is true.
Commercial activities are the most easiest to understand in Namibia.
Huh?
Yes, Hamoud. If I tell you that your liter of milk cost $5 Namibian for the farmer to procure from the cow, even though the farmer owns the cow. But let's just say it cost that farmer $5 Namibian. Mm. And it cost the guy packaging the milk, ne?
Mm-hmm.
That has to, the guy that has to sell it to the supermarket.
Yeah.
It cost that guy another $5.
Yeah.
Remember, he bought it $5 per liter.
The cost of packaging was also $5.
$5, so it's $10 now.
Yeah.
And then he sells a $10 price. Let's make it an $11. Let's add another $1. Mm-hmm. He sells it at $11 to the supermarket. The supermarket sells it to you for $15. What is the supermarket's markup? It's the $4. It is the easiest thing to know. It is the easiest piece of economic information you need to know in this country. But for some reason, Namibians don't know this.
Yeah, that says, okay, I think we need to talk about that, like, in detail. But, we have business and economic segment, coming up. That brings us to the end of, Home Run for today. Until tomorrow, same time, same place on Eagle FM, from me. You'll have a good one.
And enjoy the rest of your programming in our company, dear listeners. Stay tuned for the PES after this.
It's time to win your share of $500,000 in prizes with Windhoek Beer. Find one of the 100% real quotes broadcast across Namibia on billboards, in stores, in newspapers, and on social media. Buy any Windhoek Beer, SMS the underliner code to 75050, or scan the QR code to enter on WhatsApp. So, spot a quote, grab a Windhoek Beer, and you could win. Windhoek, real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly. T's and C's apply.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before.